It's literally just about every single morning in my house that someone in our family, whether it's me or my wife Erica or one of the kids, someone asks the very same question. What's the weather going to be today? Every day, this is not an exaggeration. Someone is always wanting to know as they're getting ready for the day, getting dressed for school, whatever. Someone was always asking about the weather. And I'm going to go out on a limb and just suggest that we are not the only family like this. This is a very important question, right? The answer to that question determines how we prepare for the day ahead and what we choose to do or maybe what we choose not to do, right? Whether we wear shorts or pants, whether we wear shoes or flip-flops, or whether we wear t-shirts or sweatshirts or big heavy jackets, it all depends on the conditions awaiting us outside. Okay, the same thing goes, at least for our family, whether or not we would choose to go camping for the weekend or to go for a walk or maybe spend a weekend at the lake. The weather conditions matter to us and ultimately affect how we are going to spend our time. And if you really are anything like my family, it's not just warm and cold that you are concerned with. So many of the activities that we enjoy and that we like to do every day in life, they depend. So many of these activities depend on the right set of conditions in order for them to happen. For instance, when I go fishing, which I love to do, I have just been in the habit, I'm not even sure where this started, but I check the barometric pressure outside. And if it's too high, anything like 30 or above, I start to wonder and get nervous that maybe the fish will not be all that active. If I'm trout fishing, I will check the stream reports to see if the water is too high or if it's too low, maybe it's too murky, and all of this stuff affects the overall fishing conditions. If you like to ski or to snowboard, the conditions on the slopes matter, right? Is there enough snow? Is it real? Is it man-made? Is it fresh powder? If so, how many inches, right? Is it too icy? Is it too cold? All of it will affect your experience if you even choose to participate in the first place. Same thing for water skiing. Conditions out on the water matter. Is the lake too choppy or too rough, right? If it is, maybe you choose to wait another day. And the very same thing goes for investing or you're buying stock or real estate or getting approved for a loan even. You got to make sure you do some homework first, right? You got to know, is this a good time to buy or is this a good time to sell? Are interest rates high or low, right? The conditions of the market, they matter, and ultimately they will affect what step you choose to make. The reality is, we really don't do much of anything today without evaluating the lay of the land first. Most of the things that we think are worth our time require us to check the conditions first so that we can guarantee that the experience will be just right. And most of us, we need the most optimal conditions before we would move forward with much of anything. Now, here's why I bring all this up to you today. It's because last week we kicked off a brand new series, which you heard about. We kicked off a brand new series called Seizing Your Divine Moment. And what I want to help you understand today is that your divine moment and my divine moment has a set of optimal conditions too. In fact, there is actually, I think, just one condition in particular that if it's present, it very well could be the evidence that you are standing right on the edge of your divine moment. And I want you to know what that condition is that precedes your divine moment. I want you to know what that condition is so that you might know how to respond to it when you encounter it anywhere in your life. And we're going to see what that condition is in the second week of this series as we pick back up with this story of the Old Testament character named Jonathan, whose story is recorded in the book of 1 Samuel chapter 14. Now, before we get to this, before we uncover the one condition that sets the stage for your divine moment and my divine moment, what I want to do here is I want to remind you what this series is all about. I want to kind of get you up to speed on where we have been and fill you in on some more context of this moment that we are putting under the microscope. So last week I kicked off this entire series wondering, actually. We kicked off the whole thing wondering about how many of us ever feel like we're living our lives in neutral, right? Not really going backward per se, but not really moving forward either. I asked if it was possible that any of us had even defined goodness or even holiness by what we separate ourselves from rather than what we give ourselves to. And it was in this line of thinking that Irwin McManus, pastor and author, was his quote that really grabbed my attention, and I wonder if it maybe grabbed your attention too. I read this last week that McManus says this: "I am convinced that the great tragedy is not the sins we commit, but the life that we fail to live." Okay, that in a nutshell is what this series is all about. Daring greatly. Daring to live the life of adventure that God has called us to. Challenging ourselves to maximize the moments that God has placed in front of us rather than missing those moments or letting those moments pass us by. Because here is the truth. We cannot follow God in neutral. And it's when we refuse to live in neutral. It's when we refuse to let circumstances limit us. It's in those instances that I think we take the first step toward seizing our divine moment. And so just last week, we started to follow the Old Testament character Jonathan, who refused to live his life in neutral. He refused to let his unfortunate circumstances dictate his future. You see, Jonathan was the son of Israel's very first king. His name was Saul. And rather than being next in line, which you might expect, rather than being next in line to become king and to inherit the throne, this privilege was kind of taken from Jonathan and promised to somebody else. Some of you know it was promised to a shepherd boy named David, Jonathan's best friend. Okay? But what's remarkable about Jonathan is that he didn't just fade into obscurity, right? After this, he wasn't just kind of banished to a life of insignificance, and he was anything but some kind of loser that was rejected by God. He seized a moment in front of him that I think was his divine moment, and the divine impact that it created rippled all throughout the entire nation of Israel. And so Jonathan's divine moment, as we've been and will be looking at in this series, Jonathan's divine moment, it plays out actually on the battlefield in an ongoing conflict and war that the nation of Israel fought with the Philistines. And so let me remind you specifically at this moment here what exactly is happening. Jonathan's father, Saul, he's king, told you that, and he's, you know, by default, he's the commander of the troops. Earlier in this conflict, Saul disobeyed God's instructions, and he advanced too soon before God had instructed him to do so. It was a big mistake, right? He lost God's favor, and he, quite frankly, lost the confidence of so many of his troops, and his army began to scatter. And so now at this moment, when God is in fact ready to kind of act on Israel's behalf, Saul has only 600 men left, and he's got two, yes, you heard me correctly here, two swords. That's all I've got. And a once impatient Saul, he's now paralyzed with fear. And he's unwilling to engage in the very same battle that he, you know, rushed into not long before. And so he and his troops, they're camped out under the shade, we read, and they're camped out under the cover of a giant pomegranate tree. And in the middle of the night, this is, you know, what we started to uncover last week. In the middle of the night, Jonathan wakes up his armor bearer, and he says the four words that differentiate a moment missed from a moment maximized. He said to his armor bearer, "Come on, let's go." He wants the two of them to go over to the Philistine outpost to pick a fight. Against all odds, with an enemy much bigger and much stronger. And last week, I ruined the whole ending of the story for you when I told you that in the end, Israel defeats the Philistines in dramatic fashion. And it was because of the bold action that Jonathan took when no one else really would. It was because of that bold action that we learned that seizing your divine moment demands that you take initiative. What we see in Jonathan's story, and quite frankly, throughout the pages of Scripture, is that God honors initiative. God blesses the initiative that we take in His name, and He uses it to not only bless our lives, but to bless the lives of others around us. Initiative is so important, vital to seizing your divine moment. And so are the conditions, the optimal conditions surrounding this very same moment. And so what I want to do is I want to drop back into this story that we're reading. It's actually just one short chapter that we are looking at for the entire 6 weeks of this series. And in the next few verses, we are going to see the one condition that will most likely precede any divine moment that you or I will ever seize in our lives. And we have to know what it is. You have to know what it is. I have to know what it is so that we are ready for it when it presents itself and so that we are not discouraged by it either. So we're going to discover this one condition, and to do so, we're going to pick up in this story in verse 4. Jonathan has just said to his armor bearer, "Come on, let's go." And here's what we now begin to read in verse 4. To reach the Philistine outpost, Jonathan had to go down between two rocky cliffs that were called Bozez and Senna. Now, as if this battle wasn't already dangerous enough, Jonathan and his armor bearer, they had to traverse two rocky cliffs. And I'm just going to guess that they didn't have ropes and harnesses and carabiners and the little bag hanging off their belt with the chalk in there to, you know, keep grip on their hands, right? So completely fearlessly and unbelievably undeterred, they cross these rocky cliffs and they get themselves into position. And just in case Jonathan's armor bearer is getting cold feet or forgets the plan, Jonathan reiterates the plan, and this time with a little more angst in his voice. Here's verse 6. He says, "Let's go," right? This is what he keeps saying. "Come on, let's go to the outpost of those pagans," right? He's getting excited now. Jonathan's telling his armor bearer, "Let's go." And I kind of said this last week, but I'll remind you, "Come on, let's go." Him saying, "Hey, let's go over to the outpost," it's kind of code for "let's go pick a fight." The two of them are going to pick a fight with the Philistines. And so this is what he says to his armor bearer. And now pay very, very, very close attention to what he says next. He tells his armor bearer, "Come on, let's go. Let's go pick a fight." Here's what he says next. "Perhaps the Lord will help us, for nothing can hinder the Lord." Perhaps? Perhaps the Lord will help us? Can I don't know about you, but I do my best and try to not follow people into dangerous situations when they use the word perhaps to, you know, try to suggest that everything is going to be okay. I much prefer to follow people into dangerous situations who use words like "surely," or "there's no doubt in my mind," or "I am convinced," or "I promise you," right? These are all far more convincing options here. But Jonathan doesn't use anything even remotely similar. He goes with "perhaps." He goes with "we'll see." He goes with "maybe God will show up." I think we all know, you know, what the word "perhaps" is getting at, but here's the actual definition. I looked it up this week, and here's what the dictionary told me. Perhaps is an adverb that's used to express possibility or uncertainty. Uncertainty. Mid-Current, I think what this story teaches you and me is that seizing our divine moment will inevitably involve some bit of uncertainty. Uncertainty is not an indication that we have made a mistake, or, you know, that the door has closed, or the answer is no, or that God has somehow abandoned us. Sometimes uncertainty is just an indicator that God is about to blow our minds. right? Divine moments that we're talking about that produce divine impact, that changes lives and changes hearts, or that changes the world. These kind of divine moments, they are rarely, the surefire, can't miss, no doubt about it kind of opportunities. Right? So much more often, it's the uncertain moments where we have to step out in faith, hoping that perhaps God would help us too. Now, I fully understand that all of us here today, all of us tuning in online, I understand that we would prefer a God of definitely. I get that. I understand that we would prefer as often as possible a God of definitely, but more often than not, I think he is a God of maybe. And I'm sure that seems strange to you. You're going, well, what kind of God is that? What kind of God is a God that only promises us a maybe? Here's what you need to understand. The more certain that you are of any step that you are about to take, or any step that you think is important, the more certain you are of you and your own capabilities and your own abilities, the less you will depend on God to take that step. And for any of you who are thinking like, well, so what's the problem with that? Here's the problem with that. You will have successfully robbed yourself of an opportunity to see God show up in your life. See, far too many people today, they're either, number one, they're either skeptical of God in some ways because God doesn't seem to show up in the world like they would expect him to. Like, people are going like, well, what kind of God is that doesn't show up into some of the things that we're seeing today? Or other people, even God-honoring people, they'll get discouraged at how God seems, so absent or so silent in their life. But here's the deal, right? Most of the very same people rarely leave any space for God to show up. They rarely operate with any bits of uncertainty. There's never a perhaps God would come through me moment in their life. If they can't comprehend it or pay for it or save it or guarantee it or plan for it or brag about it or mark it down on the calendar or, chart it out on a spreadsheet, they don't even try it. And they never put themselves in a position to actually experience what Jonathan believes deep down in his heart, because here's what he says next in verse 6. He says he can win a battle whether he has many warriors or only a few. Let's go pick a fight. Perhaps God will show up, because you know what? I believe that God can win a battle whether he has many warriors or a few. Folks, you got to believe the same thing to be true for you. Uncertainty in the moments that come our way. Uncertainty is rarely the dead end that we think it is, right? God isn't limited by the circumstances and even the uncertain circumstances in which you might find yourself. He can help you win the battle, and he can help you seize the moment, whether you've got it all together or not, or whether you have all the answers or not, or whether you've got it all figured out yet or not. And as a result, here's what I hope you and I understand. Here's what I think you and I get a chance to learn in this, is that uncertain circumstances are simply invitations to become more certain of God in our life. Uncertain circumstances that come our way in any given moment, they are invitations and they are opportunities for us to become so much more certain of a good God who is for us and not against us. I think divine moments and divine movements and divine opportunities will almost always include uncertainty. And so if you and I are going to seize our divine moment, and we're going to start to make a divine impact in the world around us, I think that we have to start believing in the miracle of uncertainty. We've got to start believing in the miracle of uncertainty. Like it or not, I have had to believe in the miracle of uncertainty at almost every stage of my adult life and my ministry in church. You may look at me and you may think, oh, Pastor Stan, he must be so certain of everything that he does. God, I bet for Sten, I bet God uses big, fluorescent, blinking, flashing lights to direct Sten in every single step that he takes. I would love that. And despite my prayers for that kind of clarity and for that kind of certainty in everything that I do, that couldn't be further from the truth. It, quite frankly, it never has been. Every single day of my life, I have to choose to believe and to keep believing in the miracle of uncertainty. In fact, I'll tell you two of the biggest decisions that I've made recently that I would not have made if certainty was a requirement in order to move forward. Number one, I would have never started this church. Right, 5 or 6 years ago, Eric and I knew that, you know, something was next for us. You know, a few new opportunities came onto our radar, a potential position at a church over here, another possibility at a church over there, and then there was this church planting thing, right, going somewhere totally new and just starting a church from the ground up. And initially, I'll be very honest with you, initially, church planting was very low on the totem pole. Why? Way too much uncertainty. Way too much. I'm moving our family to a place that we had never been and where we, quite frankly, didn't know anyone, to start a church with nothing and with no one. It was way too risky. It was Erica who often asked the most. She'd be going like, where do the people come from? I don't get it. Like, where do they come from? Really? I mean, it just felt insane. And so, quite honestly, we said no to church planting multiple times before we ever said yes. Because eventually, it was the uncertainty of the moment. It was the uncertainty of the step that was before us that convinced us that this was the step we needed to take. It was the uncertainty that convinced us that this is where we would become more certain of God in our lives. That this is where we would become more certain of him, and this is where we would learn to depend on him every single day for every single thing that we were doing. We only planted this church because we believed in the miracle of uncertainty. And quite frankly, here's number two, right? The same thing is true with our new church home that you've been hearing about. I'll be really honest with you here. You got to hear me out from start to finish here, right? But I'll be honest with you. I would have never signed the dotted line for our new building downtown if certainty was a requirement. You know, maybe you're thinking that, hey, before we decided to raise up the walls of a new home, maybe you're thinking that, you know, we consulted the church planter's user guide, which clearly articulated the conditions for when to build a new church home and for how to do it and when to do it and what exactly to build. Unfortunately, that handbook does not exist. Okay. Similarly, I'll be honest with you, you might be tempted to think that we crunched the numbers and we laid it all out and we determined that definitively, without a doubt, no question about it, money would never be anything that we ever had to worry about in all this. You'd be wrong. The truth is, I'm just being honest with you here. The truth is, there is uncertainty all around us for this new building. Raising $600,000 for a four-year-old church, that's a pretty big feat. And then once we do that, on top of that, our rent is going to be increased by thousands of dollars. If certainty was a requirement, I mean, if it was a requirement that I stand up in front of you and say, without a shadow of a doubt, I am absolutely certain that we have everything that we need on our own right now to do this on our own, if that's what was required of me, I would have said no a long time ago. But here's the deal. I believe, and I want all of us to believe, we have to believe in the miracle of uncertainty. There's no other way to follow Jesus. Now, I certainly don't want you to lose confidence in me. Or in us. But I would really, really, really love for your confidence in God to grow exponentially. Essentially, we're saying, come on, Midcurrent, let's go. Let's build a church. Let's open our doors wider to this community. Let's invite more people to the well. Let's give more people a taste of living water. Perhaps God will show up and bless it all like crazy. Now, I honestly, I'm not suggesting that we're being irresponsible. We have some of the sharpest minds helping lead us through this project at every stage of the way. So I'm not suggesting that we are being irresponsible. But the truth is, uncertainty lies around each and every corner. And it's not a reason to jump ship. It's not a reason to turn back around. And it's not a reason, we should have never begun this whole deal in the first place. It's simply an invitation for all of us. It's an opportunity for all of us to become so much more certain of God and what he wants to do in our lives and what he wants to do in the life of this community. And we won't experience it, right? We won't experience it as a church, and we won't experience it in any other place in our lives if we aren't willing to live with, if we aren't willing to take a step forward into just a little bit of uncertainty. I think it's the conditions that set you up and set me up and set us up for the divine moments God is calling us to. So that's me. That's us as a church. But what about you? Is there any uncertainty in your life right now? Any uncertainty about a moment in your marriage or in your faith? Is there any uncertainty about the dreams that you always thought you wanted to pursue, or about the sacrifices that you feel like God is asking you to make? Are there any uncertainty, any uncertain moments about the mountains that are standing in front of you? Any uncertainty about the life that you feel like God is calling you? Is there anywhere in your life where you're kind of thinking to yourself, how can this be? Or am I really about to? Or man, there's no possible way I could ever fill in the blank. Is there any uncertainty in any area of your life right now? If so, and I gotta believe that for some of us here, the answer to that question is yes. If so, let me just be the first one to say to you, congratulations. You might be right where God wants you to be. You might be standing right on the edge of your divine moment. God might be calling you out just a little deeper, and it might be an invitation for your faith to be made just a little stronger. Midcurrent, let's believe. Let's be people. Let's be families and marriages. Let's be a church. Let's be a group of people who believe in the miracle of uncertainty. And let's see if we don't become a whole lot more certain of God along the way. Let me pray for us. God, we got a room full of people here today and maybe many more tuning in online. And with that type of crowd, God, with that type of gathering, I am almost certain that there are some of us that are facing or experiencing some kind of uncertainty, God, that we are on the edge of some kind of a moment, God, where quite frankly, we're confused and there is uncertainty. There are some question marks. We can't quite see around the bend. And when we get into those moments, God, I know this because this is how I operate as well. In those moments, it's easy to get fearful. It's easy to start to worry or to doubt. It's easy to think, all too much. This must be my cue. This must be my sign that I've gone too far. It's time to turn back around. Never should have headed down this path in the first place. And God, I'm not suggesting that you inspire us to be reckless and irresponsible, God. But I do pray that, God, you would put some courage and some faith and some trust inside of each of us. So that when we really feel like, God, you are calling us forward, when we really feel like it's you on the other side of whatever uncertainty we're staring at, God, I pray that there would be something inside of us that compels us to keep moving forward, to keep pursuing the things that you've called us to, God, to keep pursuing your priorities in the world, to keep pursuing the dreams that you may have put on our heart, to keep pursuing the types of traits and the types of character that you want to develop and to refine in us. God, wherever it is that we are standing right now, for some of us, I really do believe that we might be on the edge of a moment that could become a divine moment. And so, God, for those of us standing at that place, I pray that we would hear your voice calling us forward, calling us out into the uncertainty, calling on us to trust you, to put our faith in you, that perhaps you too could come through for us. God, we thank you for this morning and for these moments, God, and even in the moments that follow here, I pray that you might speak to us and be clear to us about where it is that you are calling. We pray this in your name.